Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're diving into the world of capacity to contract, using Professor Donahue's business law notes as our guide.
Oh, this should be fun.
And trust me,
Yeah.
this is going to be anything but UT, a boring law school lecture.
Definitely.
We're going to uncover some really surprising twists and turns when it comes to figuring out who can actually legally make a binding agreement.
You know what I find so fascinating about this topic?
What's that?
It really makes you think about what it means to truly understand an agreement.
Okay.
Like, it's not just about signing your name on the dotted line.
Right.
It's about having the mental capacity to actually grasp the consequences.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So Professor Donahue starts off with what seems like a really simple question.
Okay.
Who can enter into a contract?
Right.
And he points out immediately that it's not as easy as just saying, oh, you know, anyone over 18.
Yeah, you'd think it would be that straightforward, but
right.
It's not.
It's not that simple.
It's about capacity, which basically means, can someone fully understand the terms of a contract and the potential outcomes?
You know, right.
It's a core principle of contract law.
Yeah.
And it can get pretty complicated.
So to illustrate this, Professor Donahue gives this really interesting scenario.
Okay, I like scenarios.
So imagine this.
Okay.
You have a 14-year-old kid, totally stoked, puts a deposit down on this, like, limited edition skateboard.
Right.
Dad finds out.
Uh-oh.
He's furious.
Yeah.
Demands the shop owner give the money back.
Oh, boy.
So now the question is,
yeah,
should the shop owner return the deposit?
That is the question, isn't it?
Yeah.
And this is where the whole idea of minority comes in.
Okay.
Legally speaking, a minor might not completely understand the seriousness of a contract.
Right.
So the law often protects them.
Okay.
By making those contracts what we call voidable.
Voidable.
Meaning they can back out if they want to.
So in our skateboard example,
yeah,
the kid could probably get his money back.
Most likely, yes. The law is really geared towards protecting minors from making decisions that they might regret later on.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But Professor Donahue also points out that there are some exceptions to this.
Oh, of course there are exceptions.
Yeah.
It's the law.
Always exceptions. Damn. He mentions the concept of necessaries.
Right.
Things yeah. like food, shelter, medical care.
Yeah, the essentials.
Right.
The things you absolutely need.
So what happens in those cases?
Well, in those situations, the contract is more likely to be enforceable, even if my minor is involved.
Okay.
It comes down to balancing the need to protect minors.
Right.
With the fact that everyone needs access to those basic necessities.
So even though the law is trying to protect minors, it also recognizes that, you know, sometimes they need to enter into contracts for their own well-being.
Exactly.
It's a tricky balance.
It is. It's a fascinating balancing act.
For sure.
And that's what makes this whole topic so interesting.
Yeah.
It's not just about memorizing laws.
Right.
It's about how you apply those laws to real-life situations.
And real-life situations are messy.
They are messy.
And speaking of things getting messy, Professor Donahue brings up how ideas about capacity can actually vary across different cultures.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
He even mentions some places where women still need a male relative's permission to enter into a contract.
It's true. And you know, if we think about that in the bigger picture, it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
Let's say you're a company trying to negotiate a contract in a country where women don't have that independent capacity.
Right.
It could have a huge impact on your entire strategy.
Wow.
Even whether or not the agreement is actually valid.
So even something like capacity to contract, which seems pretty straightforward.
You would think so.
Can become a major obstacle in international business.
Absolutely.
It's a good reminder that legal systems are really tied to cultural norms.
Mm-hmm.
And those norms can be very different around the world.
For sure. It's a great example of how the legal landscape is way more dynamic and nuanced than people realize.
Right.
And it shows how important research and awareness are when you're dealing with contracts across borders.
It's not just about knowing the law in your own country.
Nope, not at all.
So we've seen how age and cultural differences can affect capacity.
Right.
But what about situations where a minor is basically treated as an adult?
Ah, yes.
Professor Donahue talks about emancipated minors.
Okay.
What's that all about?
So emancipation is a legal process that essentially gives a minor the same contractual rights as an adult.
Okay.
And this often happens in situations where the minor is married or serving in the military
right.
or if they've proven that they can be financially independent.
I'm thinking about those child actors and actresses who start making serious money at a really young age. Are they automatically emancipated, or is it more complicated than that?
It's definitely more complicated.
Okay.
Usually, emancipation involves a court review where a judge looks at the minor's maturity level and their ability to manage their own affairs responsibly.
Right.
It's about making sure their interests are protected.
Okay.
But also recognizing that they have these adult-like responsibilities.
So even if a 16-year-old is starring in a huge movie,
right,
it's not a given.
It's not automatic.
That they're emancipated.
Exactly.
There's still this legal oversight.
Yeah, yeah.
To make sure that they're not being taken advantage of.
It's important to have those safeguards.
That's really interesting.
And that's what makes the legal system so intricate. You know, it's always trying to balance individual freedom.
Right.
With the need for protection.
It's a constant balancing act.
It is.
So we've looked at how capacity works for individuals, but what about corporations?
Ah, yes, corporations.
Professor Donahue says for corporations, it's less about age and more about something called designated authority.
Right, because a corporation, unlike a person, acts through its designated representatives. So this could be anyone from the CEO all the way down to like a sales manager, depending on the scope of their authority within the company.
So it's not enough for someone to just have like a fancy title?
No, not at all.
They need to actually have the power to bind the corporation to the agreement.
Exactly. That's where designated authority comes in.
Got it.
And Professor Donahue uses a really good example to illustrate this.
Okay.
He talks about a nursing home.
Okay.
Let's say a salesperson is trying to sell these high-tech beds to the nursing home.
All right.
So they meet with the chief of nursing, who's totally on board, wants to sign the contract right away.
But would that contract actually be valid?
That's a great question. And that's exactly the point Professor Donahue's in making.
Okay.
Just because someone has authority within a specific area.
Like the nursing department. Doesn't mean they can make decisions for the entire corporation.
Nope. And this is where understanding the structure of a corporation becomes super important.
Okay, so if it's not the chief of nursing, then who would have the authority in our nursing home example?
Well, for a major purchase like those high-tech beds, the salesperson would probably need to be talking to someone like the chief financial officer.
The CFO.
Yeah, the CFO. They typically have the authority to make big financial decisions like that.
So even if the chief of nursing is super enthusiastic about those beds, it all comes down to who actually has the power to sign the contract.
That's it. And this principle applies even at the highest levels of a company.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So let's say the nursing home wants to do a massive expansion project.
Okay.
We're talking like a $40 million loan to build a whole new wing.
Wow. $40 million?
Could the CFO just go to the bank and secure that loan on their own?
I'm guessing that even though the CFO manages the finances, a decision that big probably needs a higher level of approval.
You're absolutely right.
Okay.
When you're talking about really big decisions,
right,
like that massive loan, or even selling the entire nursing home,
wow,
the ultimate authority usually lies with the board of directors.
The board of directors.
Yes, they're like the guardians of the corporation's fate.
So it's not enough to just have a powerful position.
Yep.
You need to be operating within the specific powers that are given to you by the corporation.
Exactly. It's a fascinating web of authority.
It really is.
Yeah, it really is. And you know what's interesting is even when you found the right person with the authority, there's still a lot of due diligence involved.
Right. It's not like they can just take anyone's word for it.
Exactly. Like in our nursing home example.
Yeah.
How can the bank be absolutely sure?
Right.
That they're dealing with someone who can actually commit the corporation to that $40 million loan?
It's a great question because it's not like the CFO can just walk in and be like, hey, trust me, I'm the CFO. Give me the money.
Right. They need more than just a title.
For sure.
The bank wouldn't just take their word for it. Wow. They'd want to see documentation.
What kind of documentation?
Things like a formal resolution from the board of directors, specifically authorizing that loan.
So they need proof
that
the whole corporation is on board with this.
Exactly. It's a big financial decision.
It's like a checks and balances system within the corporation that protects both sides.
Exactly.
The bank from lending money to someone who can't actually make the commitment.
Right.
And the nursing home from someone making a reckless decision.
It protects the corporation from itself almost.
And this whole idea of due diligence.
Yeah.
It's not just for these huge loans.
No, not at all.
It applies to contracts of all sizes.
Right. Whether you're buying a car, signing a lease,
right,
or even entering into a business partnership.
Okay.
verifying that the other party can actually contract is so important.
So important. Professor Donahue actually brought up this real-world case.
Oh, really?
That illustrates this perfectly.
Okay.
It involved a miner purchasing emergency supplies
right
before a tsunami hit.
Oh, wow.
And technically, yeah.
The miner might not have had full capacity to contract.
Right, because they're a miner.
But the court actually upheld the contract.
Wow, interesting.
Because they recognized
that
those emergency supplies
were
essential
for survival.
Or the miner's safety and well-being.
That's a great example of how the law can be flexible and adapt to different situations.
It's not always black and white.
Not at all. Context matters.
So it's not just about memorizing legal definitions.
Yeah.
It's about understanding how those definitions are interpreted and applied.
In real life situations, exactly.
In the real world. And it sounds like getting legal advice could be a really good idea
if
things get complicated.
Especially if there's any doubt about capacity.
Mm-hmm.
A lawyer can help you figure things out.
Right.
And make sure you're protected.
Better to be safe than sorry.
Always.
Now let's go back to Professor Donahue's point about capacity varying across cultures.
Okay.
He mentioned how in some countries,
women still need permission from a male relative to enter into a contract.
It's a powerful reminder.
It is.
That what we consider normal legal practice here in the U.S.
Right.
Can be totally different in other parts of the world.
It makes you realize how much progress we've made when it comes to gender equality, but also how far we still have to go globally.
It's true. And for anyone doing business internationally, understanding these cultural differences is critical.
Absolutely.
Imagine trying to negotiate a contract in a country where women have limited capacity.
Yeah.
It could completely change your entire strategy.
You'd have to rethink your whole approach.
For sure. And it highlights how important it is to not just understand contract law, but also the cultural and societal context.
The bigger picture.
Exactly. It adds a whole other layer of complexity.
It really does. And that brings us back to this idea that capacity isn't just about age or mental state. It's also about the legal and cultural norms of the society we live in.
It all ties together.
Professor Donahue also pointed out that court decisions play a big role in how capacity is interpreted and applied over time.
That makes sense.
He gave this example of a case.
Okay.
So it sounds like the courts have a lot of flexibility.
Yeah, they do.
To adapt these legal ideas to real-world situations.
They have to.
It's not always about following strict rules.
Yeah.
It's about considering the specific facts of each case.
Exactly.
Which makes sense.
It does.
And that makes me think about individuals with mental impairments.
Oh, yeah. That's a really important aspect of capacity.
Professor Donahue touched on that briefly.
Okay.
He mentioned how capacity can be affected by certain mental conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So how does the law handle those situations?
Well, the law recognizes that people with certain mental impairments.
Okay.
Might not be able to fully understand a contract or consent to it.
Mm-hmm.
So in those cases, the contracts they enter into might be considered voidable.
Voidable.
To protect them from being taken advantage of.
So it's kind of similar to how the law protects minors, but instead of age, it's about mental capacity.
Exactly.
And making sure things are fair.
It's about ensuring fairness.
But it's important to remember.
Yeah, what's that?
That capacity isn't like a yes or no thing.
Right. It's not black and white.
It's more like a spectrum.
It's a spectrum.
There might be times where someone has limited capacity.
Okay.
Meaning
yeah.
they might understand some types of contracts,
mm-hmm.
but not others.
That's a good point.
So it recognizes that people's abilities can be really different.
They can.
And the law needs to be flexible.
It,
to handle those differences.
It's about finding that balance between protecting people and respecting their ability to make their own choices.
When possible.
Exactly.
This whole conversation about capacity has made me think about how important awareness is.
It's so important.
Especially in a world where contracts are everywhere.
They are. You can't escape them.
You click, I agree. Online.
All the time.
Or you sign a form
without
really thinking about it.
Without reading the fine print.
Exactly.
And that can be dangerous.
Professor Donahue ended his lecture.
Okay. How did he wrap it up?
With this really thought-provoking question.
I like those.
He asked, in a world where contracts control so much of our lives, who gets to decide who has the capacity to contract?
Wow, that's a big question.
It is. It's a really deep question.
It makes you think.
It does.
About the power of the legal system.
Yeah.
And how individual rights and societal norms all intersect.
It's been a fascinating journey.
It has.
Exploring the intricacies of capacity to contract.
We've covered a lot of ground.
We have. We've seen how it affects individuals.
Yeah, of all ages and backgrounds.
Corporations.
Mm-hmm.
We even touched on
yeah.
cultural differences and social justice.
It's all connected.
It really is. And it shows
yeah.
that law isn't just a bunch of rules.
It's more than that.
It's a dynamic system.
That's always evolving.
That reflects how complex human interactions are.
Exactly.
So as we wrap up our deep dive,
yeah.
I think the main takeaway for our listeners is this.
Okay, what's the takeaway?
Whether you're buying a skateboard,
right.
signing a business deal,
mm-hmm.
or navigating those tricky international agreements,
right.
understanding capacity to contract
is crucial.
It's about knowing how to protect yourself.
Absolutely.
Making sure that the agreements you make are legally sound and fair.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
It's been a great discussion.
I agree.
Until next time.
Yeah.
Stay curious.
Stay informed.
Always good advice.
And don't forget.
What's that?
To read the fine print.